chapter 17, where we will read that God is greater than any giant Goliath. God is greater than any giant Goliath, or any Goliath giant, however you want to put it. Now, back in chapter 16, which we covered last week, we read about how God positioned David to one day be in a position to take over the throne of Israel. As you remember, Saul was the people's choice. The people wanted a king just like all the other nations, and they got exactly that, a king like everybody else. Make sure, be very careful about what you ask for, because you just very well may get it. As we know, Saul had no heart for God. When he was given a specific command from God, Saul exhibited rebellion and stubbornness. Instead of doing exactly what God had said, he tried to change the rules to benefit himself. Instead of destroying all the Amalekites and all their sheep and oxen and donkeys and everything, he decided to spare Agag, the king of the Amalekites, and he decided to keep for himself the best of the sheep and oxen. And then he even went so far as to blame Samuel and to blame God, saying, well, the reason I did this was to sacrifice to the Lord your God. You know, if your God, if you weren't into sacrifice all the time, I might have obeyed God. Just twisted in his thinking. And people that aren't walking with God, that really don't want to serve the Lord, but yet are trying to serve their own needs, man, they can, as the saying goes, figures can't lie, but liars sure can figure. Okay? And Saul was one of those. Remember that when you get ready to buy another car. Figures can't lie, but liars sure can figure. So, at that time, the priest, the prophet, the judge, Samuel, pronounced that God was going to take away the kingdom from Saul and give it to somebody who was truly a man after God's own heart, and ultimately that was David. Then the Lord told Samuel to go to the house of Jesse. He had 8 sons, and he said, one of his sons is going to be the future king. Go and anoint the one that I have chosen. And so the boys are brought before him from the oldest to the youngest. And the first one, Eliab, he looked the part. Man, this is king material right here. Get him in front of the cameras. He looks good. He'll say the right things. We'll write his speeches and all that. But the Lord said, no, 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 no. Do not look on the outward appearance. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And so he went through all the sons, and Samuel said, the Lord hasn't chosen any of these. Is there any more? And they said, well, there's the shepherd boy, the youngest. But certainly God wouldn't want him. He's out there tending the sheep. He's not king material. And said, well, bring him in just in case. And sure enough, that was the Lord's choice. And so then David was anointed to be the king over Israel. The Spirit of the Lord came upon David. There's just one problem. Saul didn't want to give up his throne. And the Spirit of God came upon David, but then we read that an evil spirit had come upon Saul, tormenting him, really tormented in his thoughts and all. And Saul's advisors, they weren't the most spiritual people. Instead of saying, hey, Saul, bottom line is, and you're in rebellion to God. And when you say no to the Lord, you say yes to the devil. You've opened the door to the devil. Now, say no to him. Say yes to God. Let's have a prayer meeting. Let's seek the Lord. Let's get your life right so that you'll be walking with God and you'll turn the lights on in your life and then the darkness will flee. They didn't say that. They instead said, let's find somebody who plays the harp. Let's find a skilled musician who can play nice background soothing music. And when this torment comes upon you, then the instrument will play and it'll soothe your soul. And it's just very bizarre, strange suggestion. But in one sense, it was so God to do this, because David could play the harp and he could play very, very well. And so one advisor said, you know, I know this kid. He's the son of Jesse of Bethlehem. Why don't you ask him to come in and be your worship leader, be your musician, your in-house musician. And okay, go ahead and do that. In chapter 16, verse 23, we read, and so it was whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, and when he's tormented all, that David would take a harp and play it with his hand, as opposed to his teeth. No, with his hand, then Saul would become refreshed and well, and the distressing spirit would depart from him. And that brings us, of course, now to chapter 17, where we read one of the most recognizable stories in the Bible. when a giant of a man is destroyed by a small boy who dared to really, really believe God. This small boy who really, really believed God, and God used him to destroy this giant of a man. In verses 1 through 11, we read that the battle lines are drawn. The battle lines are drawn. Verse 1. Now, the Philistines, again, they were Israel's perennial enemies for many, many, many years. The Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. So they invaded the territory of one of the 12 tribes of Israel, the tribe of Judah. And they encamped between Socoh and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And this area right here is where they had encamped between these two little points on the map, which is about 10 to 15 miles southwest of the city of Jerusalem. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side. Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them, a dry riverbed that only has water in it when there are flood rains. Now, one of the highlights of our upcoming tour, there's several of us here tonight that are going to Israel in October. We're going to go to the Valley of Elah. In the two tours I have taken previously, it's one of my favorite spots. I really, really enjoy it. There is nothing there. There's no buildings. There's no city. There's no bus stops. There's nothing. There's a road that, and it's like wilderness area. It's not a whole lot of trees at all, but just a big field and a plain, and there's a hill and a valley in between, and a lot of smooth stones in this valley. And the guides will joke with us, and they'll say, take all the smooth stones you want, because another truckload's coming in a little while to dump off more. It's fine. So, you know, they're just being dorks. So we get to go there, and we get to read the story. And you know what? The land looks pretty much like it did some 3,000 years ago. It's a really, really cool place to be. I really enjoyed it. Yes, I enjoyed the Garden Tomb and Golgotha, and I enjoyed the Temple Mount and all that stuff. But for some reason, I really like the Valley of Elah. Have I built it up too much? Okay, good. Here we go. So if you're going, you're going to get to take some stones with you. What did you take from your trip from Israel? Rocks. Anyway, so it'll be a lot of fun. And now picture in your mind the two large hilltops. They're not mountains. They're just large hills. And it slopes down, and there's this valley with a stream bed. There's an army on either side. You got the Philistine army on one side and the Israeli army on the other side. And they're yelling taunts back at each other. They're shaking their swords. They're talking trash. They're trying to intimidate the other side, because they both sized up each other's army, and neither of them felt like they had the advantage. If they did, if one army felt they had the advantage, they would have said, charge, and they would have come down and you know, engaged in the battle, and it would have been over in a day. Typically, that's how wars went back then. Not like today, where politicians like to drag them out forever and ever and ever. But back then, you would have army against army. Once they decided it's on, they would clash. And then later that day, there would be a clear victor. And the others would be defeated and destroyed, or defeated and they'd be running off. And that would be the end of it. That's how it usually worked out. Now, they both, again, they didn't feel like they had the advantage, but the Philistines had an ace up their sleeve. The Philistines had a very threatening weapon in their arsenal. Their gun was way bigger than Israel's biggest gun. Notice in verse 1, and a champion, they didn't have literal guns back then, just in case. That was figurative, okay?
Pastor John thinks that David had a gun.
No, I don't. He did have a bazooka. And the champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. A span was the distance between an average man's thumb and pinky, about 6 inches. About 6 inches. A cubit was the distance from an average man's elbow to his middle finger, about 18 inches, give or take. So 6 cubits and a span roughly equal 9.5 feet. A 9.5 foot tall man, and there have been guys that tall even in recent history. This guy was tall. In fact, so tall that if he jumped, he would have hit his head on a regulation basketball hoop. Because a hoop is 10 feet tall. And so even if he jumped that much, he would have hit his head on the rim. He could not walk underneath the backboard because the backboard hangs lower than the rim does. And imagine any team getting him. Making Shaquille O'Neal look like a little twerp, you know. Oh, you're only 7 feet and 300 pounds. Big deal. Goliath's 9.5 feet tall, and he probably weighed 500, 600 pounds. He's going to throw you around like a rag doll, Shaquille. Notice how big he and strong he must have been. Verse 5, he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. You know, look at that little drawing behind me. It is of a man like maybe like Goliath with a metal coat on him that protected him from arrows and spears and all. A coat of mail, and the weight of the coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of bronze, or roughly 125 pounds. That's just for his coat. This guy carried 120. Anybody here willing to say they weigh 125 pounds? Okay, yeah. Okay, well, Linda, you raise your hand. So imagine you wearing Linda and running around in battle. Okay. And that's all I'm going to say on that. And he had, notice the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and he had bronze armor on his legs, the little pieces there on his shins, and possibly up on his thighs as well. And now the staff of his, and a javelin between his shoulders, now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. The spearhead was anywhere from 15 to 20 pounds, the spearhead, plus the spear that was about maybe a 10-foot long 4x4 post. Goliath was not just big and tall, but he must have been incredibly strong. Let me give you an example. Take a 4x4 by 10-foot post and then strap a frozen turkey on the end of it and try to throw it. Yeah, average turkey, 15 to 20 pounds. That's somewhat synonymous. That's somewhat equal to what Goliath was toting around. Then he stood out. He stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, and I'm sure he didn't have a wimpy little voice.
Why have you come out here?
No.
Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself. Let him come down to me. And if he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine also said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They were paralyzed with fear. So dismayed, they just frozen. They didn't know what to do. Now again, the ancient warfare were not like modern day warfare, because usually the battles were fought and over with quickly back then. It was not uncommon for evenly matched armies to each of them, if they felt they were evenly matched, to put forth a champion. And basically a fight to the death, the winner take all match. And in this case, that's what Goliath was offering. Him against the best that Israel had to offer, a winner take all fight to the death match. Now, the best that Israel had to offer? Probably Saul. We read earlier that he was head and shoulders above everybody else in Israel. He was probably about 6'6", 6'8", 6'9", maybe. A tall guy among the Israelites in that day. And he was also battle-tested.
He had fought with the Amalekites and prevailed. He didn't do exactly what God had said to do, but he did gain victory for them and against others. But against this Philistine? No way. Saul, I'm not going up against that 9-foot-9 guy. And why wouldn't he? Well, because Saul was a carnal man, and he was looking at fleshly ways, and all he could see was this super huge big guy. He couldn't see beyond the circumstance because Saul had no spiritual insight, no spiritual upreach. And so all he could count on was what he himself brought to the table. Here's a big lesson number one. And there's about seven of them I want to point out during this message. So if you're a note taker, here's lesson number one. At the very end, I'm going to rapid fire do all those messages or all those lessons. But here's number one. In our own strength, we are no match for our enemy, the devil. In our own strengths, we're no match for the devil. He's bigger than we are, stronger, faster. It's like he's bionic. He's richer. He's more abler. He's sneakier. He is more deadly than any man, woman, or child on the face of the earth. In our strengths, there is no way we can fight against him, and he would like nothing better than to get us into the realm of the flesh to try to fight him. You know, we all have battles that we face. You guys, we've been through this, I know, many times, and I know you know this, but just as per way of reminder, every battle we face on the earth, we got to remember there's a spiritual battle happening overhead or around us, somewhere in the spiritual realm. There are forces of heaven versus forces of the enemy. Heaven and hell clashing over our situations and manifesting itself in some battles that we face. Husbands and wife that are at odds with each other all the time, they need to step back and say, you know what? Maybe there's a spiritual thing going on. Maybe we need to stop fighting each other and we need to start getting into the realm of the Spirit. Maybe we need to devote ourselves to more spiritual things, and maybe God will help us with our arguing and fighting and fussing and all. Because really, that is the case. Problems at work? Maybe, maybe we ought to fight with the weapons of our warfare, which are not carnal, but are mighty in God for the pulling down of strongholds. As children of God, we read the Bible and it does say that there is a spiritual battle taking place over our lives. And Satan would love us to stay in the realm of the flesh. It's his fault, it's her fault, and you know, they don't understand, and why don't people be nice to me, you know? But we got to remember it's spiritual, not just fleshly. So lesson number one, in our own strengths, we're no match for the devil. We're doomed. And going against him with what we bring to the table, it's suicide. Like Saul, going to go against Goliath, suicide. Stupid. In verses 12 through 27, we read that David is greatly galled over goading Goliath. Kind of like the news type, you know. Headline, David greatly galled over goading Goliath. Maybe it sounds more like a comic book. I don't know. Verse 12. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. So of the tribe of Judah there in the city of Bethlehem lived Jesse, and David was his son. He and Jesse had eight sons. The man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. Three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his three sons who went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The three oldest followed Saul, but David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep in Bethlehem. So David was kind of the part-time worship leader for Saul. He would play, Saul would get better. David would say, okay, I got to go and tend my daddy's sheep and then go back home for a while. Then he would get the phone call, the message, hey, come quickly and bring your harp. Saul's gone nuts. And he'd go back and pling, pling, pling and play and then calm him down, then go back. He did this back and forth for a while. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. So Goliath would come out and say, who will fight me? Winner take all. And then nobody would fight him and say, okay, I'm going back to my tent. Then later on, in the evening, he would come back out and do the same thing over and over again, just taunting Israel, saying, you're nothing. Your God is nothing. Our gods can whoop your God. And just really taunting, trash talking. And by the way, presented himself 40 days and nights. That was, again, highly unusual. Usually battles were over with in a day. So this is highly unusual what's happening. You know, God was stringing this out because David was back with the sheep. And so God wanted to make sure David was there and was there at the right time. Well, notice the timing. David comes at a certain time when Goliath gives his taunts, when David could hear them. Then Jesse said to his son, David, so here back at the camp in Bethlehem, Jesse says to David, now take for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000. God, big cheese eater, I guess. And see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. So bring food to your brothers and to the captain and to their captain. So it appears that if the soldiers wanted food, they kind of had to have help from home. And so food's important. Even Emperor Napoleon said, or his quota was saying, an army marches on its stomach. You know, armies continue on as long as they're well fed. Or the Navy sails on its stomach. Okay. And coffee. Yeah, that's it. Now, Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the Valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. We're actually on the mountain. I'm going to get you. You know, arguing back and shaking their swords and all. Rattling sabers. David arose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army, trash talking from their hilltops. David left his supplies in the hands of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. And he talked with them. Well, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. Notice the timing. This isn't an accident. This was on purpose. God just divinely orchestrating. You ever have that experience or many of those experiences in your life? You're like, wow, if this hadn't happened at this particular time, then, you know, bad stuff would have happened. It had to have happened at this. Well, who do you credit that with? Working your situation? That's God. You know, I don't ever see God in my life. You know, open your eyes. See his fingerprints on circumstances, arranging things behind the scenes. That's the Lord. God revealing himself to us. And so David heard these words, these taunts. The armies of Israel are stupid. Chickens. Probably, you know, doing the chicken walk. And your God is nothing. Our gods can beat your God any day. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, they fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. And so the men of Israel said, well, hey, have you seen this man who has come up? They're telling David, wow, check out the big guy. Surely he has come up to defy Israel. It shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. So triple reward, great riches, the king's daughter, and family exempt from taxes. Hey, you had me at exempt from taxes. I'm in, okay? I don't care how big this guy, I'm going to try. Now some of you younger guys are, well, I wouldn't mind the daughter. Some of you single guys. Well, when you read on, you probably didn't want that daughter. But we'll get to that in a few weeks from now. Verse 26, and by the way, riches without tax exemption, you're going to pay more than half of that in taxes, so really. How can somebody who wins $100 million live on $50 million? I don't know, but hopefully he'll figure it out. David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? Notice what David is thinking. Notice the way he's processing this. He is mad that this guy, this Goliath, is reproaching Israel. Because David is a man of faith, one who believed God's word, knew that God had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Jacob, whose name was later changed to Israel, the father of the 12 tribes, the 12 sons of Israel. David was the descendant of one of those sons, the man named Judah. David said, he's defying Israel, and I know the promise that God gave way back to Abraham and then to his sons. Whoever blesses you will be blessed. Whoever curses you will be cursed. Whoever blesses you will be blessed. Whoever curses you will be cursed. This guy is cursing Israel. Therefore, this guy has to go down. There's no way God is going to allow this man to continue to say these things. God's going to take him out. And all he's looking for is for one man to stand up and say, you know what? I'm going to be the one. He has to go down. He has cursed God. He has cursed his people. Therefore, he is a dead man while he stands. I'm going to knock him down. That's faith. Not just knowing that God will knock him down, but saying, I'm going to be the one that God uses. That's faith. Otherwise, it's just knowledge.
Yeah, God's going to take him down. Can't wait to see it. I believe you, God. You're going to do this. Can't wait for you to do that through somebody else other than me because I'm too chicken.
That's not faith. That's strong assumption, strong conviction, but that's not faith. Faith is the substance of evidence. Faith is the evidence of things not seen, the substance of things hoped for. Or the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's how it is. Faith is action and what you know to be true. By the way, he says, what shall be done this Philistine? Whoever kills the guy who takes the reproach away from Israel. Notice this next part. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? So David's willing to hit below the belt. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? You know, this is the first time that God is ever mentioned in this episode. Saul never mentions God. The men never mention God. Nobody's thinking about God at this time. Nobody's factoring God in the situation. Nobody is processing this dilemma through the lens of the living God. And notice that David knows that God is living. He's living. He's not dead. He's alive. So David is processing everything he sees with the knowledge that he has, the knowledge of God. And the conclusion is, Goliath's a dead man. How dare that punk defy the armies of the living God? Big lesson number two. God is alive. When a person processes their problems through that truth, then however big those problems are, those problems become small things. God is alive. Process your problems through that truth. God is alive. And so David again asks, well, what can be done for the guy who kills this jerk? And then the people answered him in the same manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. Whoever kills Goliath gets three rewards: riches, a king's daughter, and family exempt from taxes. In verses 28 through 37, David conquers pre-battle battles. There was a battle to be fought with Goliath, but he had some pre-battles that he first had to conquer. Well, really? What battle was that? Who did David have to fight? Who did he have to conquer? Notice verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. He sees David go, what's going to be done? What rewards will the guy get who kills him? He goes, now tell me, did you hear this? What rewards? And David's just working the camp and he's talking to these guys, making sure that they all heard the same thing from Saul, you know, before he goes out and kills Goliath. He wants to make sure. Eliab sees him doing this and thinks, my brother's such a little twerp. Who does he think he is? And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he says, why have you come down here? What are you doing here, twerp? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride, the insolence of your heart. You've come down to see the battle. You're just a little curiosity seeker. Eliab assumed that David was up to no good, but it was Eliab who was at fault. You see, Eliab was a coward. He would not stand up for the cause of God. And in his cowardice, he sees David with great courage, and it really bugged him. Now, instead of saying, you know what, my little brother's much braver than I am, instead he just got mad, tried to find fault with David. I notice here that this pre-battle battle that David had to fight was with his own family. How many times have people said, I would serve the Lord, I would, or even just go to church if my spouse would go, if my parents would let me, if my kids wouldn't disown me. I would do these things, I would go here, I would do this if it were not for a family member. That's a pre-battle battle. And sadly, there are a lot of believers who have lost and are casualties of war at the hand of their well-meaning, yet uneducated family that don't realize that it is much more important to serve God than to serve the flesh. Oh, don't be a missionary. Come on, there's no life there. You've got to go to a great university and get your master's or your doctorate so that you can be a successful whatever and make a lot of money. That's the path for you. But Dad, I have a call from God to go on the mission field, and I've been praying about going. Oh, that's crazy talk. Why would you do that? Many of you know the story of Jim Elliot, a man who back in the 50s felt a great burden to go to South America to the indigenous Indian tribes that were there, many of them very vicious. And he was leaving a successful, financially well-off life in the States to go and live basically in poverty. And somebody said, why would you do that? Why would you give up all this to go and do that? And he said, a man is no fool to give up what he cannot keep in order to gain what he cannot lose. See, if in this life only you're hoping to get stuff out of it, man, you might hit the lotto. You might make more money than anybody else. Your investments might rise while everybody else's are plummeting. But then you die, and then what? Whose will those riches be? You serve God, you lay up treasures in heaven. Hey, if Jesus is risen from the dead, which he is, then is not what he said true? He said, do not lay up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal, but lay up treasures in heaven. And so here was this battle that David was fighting even with his own brother. Would he listen to his brother and, okay, you're right, I'll go back to the sheep? No, he wouldn't do it. And so David said what any little brother who had seven older brothers would ever say, what have I done now? Any of you have older brothers and sisters? Or any of you have any younger brother in the same situation? Can you just picture this in your mind? What have I done now? The youngest saying. Is there not a cause? You know, isn't there a reason for me to be asking these questions? And they turned from him and went to somebody else, and he said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul. Hey, Saul, there's a kid in the camp who's really asking about the reward you've promised. And they, really? Is he willing to fight? And so he sent for him, and then David said to Saul, so this kid, he's like in his teens, 15, 16 maybe. He's a young guy at this time. This kid goes up to Saul and he says, let no man's heart fail because of him, because of that Goliath guy. Your servant, me, I will go and fight with this Philistine. David wasn't tall. He's especially compared to Goliath. Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." Hey, David, Goliath's been a warrior a lot longer than you've even been alive. David said to Saul, "Look, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it, struck it, delivered the lamb from its mouth, and when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard, and I struck it and killed it." Third big lesson. The battles we face today are designed by God to prepare us for future battles. The battles we face today are really preparation for the next. Today it might be a lion or a bear. Tomorrow it might be Goliath. What you're facing today, just merely a stepping stone for the next thing. And so David goes on, verse 36, "Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Again, he's young, but he's truly a man of faith. He knew this promise that God had given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so he said, "This guy's dead where he stands." Big lesson number four. People who align themselves against God and his people are not to be feared. People who align themselves against God and his people are not to be feared. "Moreover, David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.'" And Saul finally says to David, "Okay, go and the Lord be with you." Verses 38 through 47, go with what you know. Go with what you know. What does that mean? Well, let's look. Verse 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor. Saul takes his armor, he puts it all on David, and just like some young little boy trying to wear his dad's clothes and shoes and all, just hanging off of him. Put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. And David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk. He couldn't even move, for he had not tested him. He didn't know how to use this sword and the spear and the helmet. He didn't know how to use that stuff. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them." So David took them all off. Big lesson number five. Don't feel pressured to mimic others. You just be yourself. In ministry, I'm sure there are other people who have done things and they seem to be much more successful, and it's tempting to want to try to mimic them, to be like them. I consider the way Pastor Chuck Smith teaches. And without question, the Lord has used him more than anybody else I've ever known. And yet, for me to stand here, and God, you see, you know, glorious, and wear Hawaiian shirts, and really be balder than I am, and to put back all the weight on, and to try to do that, I would look really stupid. And yet I know a lot of other Calvary pastors who, and God, the cosmos and glorious and all. And I'm like, man, just be yourself. Or somebody comes from a church, there's a Calvary chapel in Fort Lauderdale, the pastor's Bob Coy, and he's really animated and he's very, very funny. And some guys try to be like Bob Coy because he's really funny and his church is huge. His church, they have this aquarium in their church. I don't even know how much it costs, but it's like he took a huge chunk of the Gulf of Mexico before BP did their thing and just dropped it in the foyer. And there's this huge fish in it, and it's supposed to be this unbelievably huge, beautiful aquarium. I think it's a perfect expenditure of money, but that's just... Now, some people try to be Bob Coy. And they're going to try to get the big crowds like that. No, just be yourself. Just be you. Don't try to put on Saul's armor and walk. You'll fall. On the other hand, though, learn to be proficient with what God has given you. What are you able to do? Develop that craft. Are you able to teach? Are you able to serve, to do? Develop that craft, that gift, that call of God, and then use it. Verse 40, that's what David did. He took his shepherd's staff. He took the shepherd's crook, took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near the Philistine. When you think of a slingshot, if you're like me, you think of a tree branch that has fork on the end and 2 rubber straps and a pouch that you rubber straps you get from an inner tube and, you know, that sort of a deal. That's not the type of sling here. Type of sling here, 2 long leather straps, one that you would secure really to your hand and the other you just hold in your fingers. And on the end of those 2 leather straps would be a pouch. You'd put a rock in it. You'd twirl it around like that. You'd let go of the one strap holding on to the other and that rock will come whistling out. And a person can become very proficient with this type of a sling. In Judges chapter 20, we read that among the tribe of Benjamin, there were 700 select men who were left-handed, and everyone could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. By the way, those of us going to Israel, we'll see lots of people selling slings all over the place. So if you want, go to the Valley of Elah, get our stones, go get our sling, and try to sneak them through customs. So anyway. By the way, how many stones did David choose? How many Goliaths were there? Thank you. Actually, 4 sons. According to 2 Samuel 21:22, these 4 were born to the giant in Gath. And they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. There were also, I'm sure, brothers of Goliath as well. But here's what David's thinking. I'm going to kill this guy. But I know there are 4 other close relatives to him. And when they see him dead, they may come after me. So I better have 5 stones. Lesson number 6. Be prepared to face and fight battles beyond the one you're currently engaged in. Be prepared to fight battles that are beyond the one that you're currently engaged in. It would be so nice. You know, I remember when a pastor's conference, a man speaking said, you know, just about the time you get a situation kind of ironed out and pushed out the back door, here comes a new one in from the front door. It's just, you got problems coming. It's nice when they go. And not kicking people out, but just the situation dealt with. And the situation goes, but sadly, it just never ends. Keeps on coming. So be prepared to face the next battle coming up. Philistine came, began drawing near to David. So David, he goes out, he's ready, I'm going to kill this guy, he's a dead man. She's going down, you know. Been trash talking me, he ain't heard trash talking yet. Wait till I get going. I'm a teenager. So Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And the Philistine looked about, and he looks down finally, and he sees David, and he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. As ruddy might just mean he looked like all boy, or maybe he had red hair. So you look at this kid, and he's like, he should be on the baseball field, or he should be playing marbles, or he should be, you know, kicking cans down the street or whatever. He shouldn't be in the battlefield. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. And David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. You got all the weapons that the world has to offer, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Unlike the rest of Israel, unlike Saul, and Saul should have been the one there in the battle. That was Saul's fight, not David's. Unlike all the rest of Israel, David had God in his arsenal. David factored God into the situation, therefore he knew Goliath was a dead man. No matter how big Goliath is, God is always bigger. And no weapon of the enemy can touch us. Big lesson number 7. With God, we win big. With God, we win big. No weapon formed against you shall prosper, Isaiah 54, verse 17 says. In Romans 8, we read, yet in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. You know, God loves you. If there's an 8th lesson, let it be that. Know that God loves you. And with God, we win big. And when we know that the Lord is with us, that it's a righteous, holy, just cause, then we too can advance with great boldness like David did. Notice in verse 46, David keeps talking. But as one man said, it ain't bragging if you can back it up. He said, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camps of the Philistine to the birds of the air, to the wild beasts of the field, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. The battle is the Lord's, as the Holy Spirit through Paul to the Romans said, what shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Verses 48 through 54, victory is contagious. Not only did David accomplish great victory, but notice what it did for the rest of Israel. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Isn't that cool? David is running at the giant. He's not waiting for the giant to come to him. He's running at the giant. That's, man, what a guy of faith. I look at this and I realize, why wait if you know you're going to win? If you know you're going to win, why wait? Just go for it. Hurry up and get it on. David put his hand into his bag, took out a stone, and he slung it, and he struck the Philistine in his forehead. He had a coat of mail on. He had protected leg coverings. He had a shield. He had a helmet. But there was one vulnerable spot right there. And David, wing, twang, and he's done. The stone sank into his forehead. He fell on his face to the earth. David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, struck the Philistine and killed him. You know, nobody else in Israel's side or the Philistine side knew that Goliath was dead. All they saw was this monster of a guy fell face first on the ground. They probably heard the thud, but they didn't know what was going on. Until David, it says, there was no sword in his hand, the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. So he took Goliath's sword, cut off Goliath's head with it. And then when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, okay, I guess he's dead now, then they fled. So much for their offer that to serve the victor in the battle. Now they're running for their lives. Now the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted. Notice how victory, David gained victory, but notice the effect it had on many other people. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and the gates of Ekron. The wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shearim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. All it took was for one man, young man of faith, to believe God and to step out and claim victory. Faith is contagious, therefore may we all be germy. Victory is contagious. Let's take the victory that God has promised us. Then David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And David carried that head around like a trophy. I don't know how long, but it was not just a day. It was a while. And some of you are going, ooh, that's gross. Not for a teenage boy. That's a cool thing right there. Look at what I got. I'm probably singing, two heads are better than one. No, I probably didn't sing. I have no idea what that song's about. If it's not a good song, I apologize. That's all the only line I know. So he took it around as a trophy. He held it by. I just like that picture. I don't know why. I think I'll leave it there for a while. We'll put it on our website. Verses 55 through 58, Saul seeks info about David's dad. Saul saw David going out to battle against the Philistine. He said to Abner, the commander. Now, this is, you know, the battle hasn't yet been fought. And so this is, meanwhile, beforehand. Saul's looking at David going out, and he says to Abner, the commander of his army, Abner, whose son is this youth? Who's this guy's dad? And Abner said, well, as your soul lives, O king, I do not know. So the king said, well, inquire whose son this young man is. You know, he had given that promise that family would be exempt from taxes. I need to know who his dad is in the slight chance that David does win. And then David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines. Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. I like that so much. There you go. Head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. Take my dad off your tax rolls. Again, there are a lot of lessons. 7 quick ones. Which we can learn from this story are, in our own strength, we are no match for our enemy, the devil. Number 2, know that God is alive. When a person processes their problems through the fact that God is alive and well and bigger than any Goliath, all those so-called big problems seem like insignificant things. Number 3, the battles we face today are designed by God to prepare us for future ones. So what you've already accomplished in your life, you know that's just preparation for the next thing coming. Number 4, whoever aligns him or herself against God is cursed. Do not fear those who are cursed or those who curse God and his people. Don't fear anybody who curses God and his people, because they are cursed, and it's only a matter of time before God brings them down. Number 5, don't try to mimic someone else. Just be yourself. Number 6, be prepared to face and fight battles beyond the one you're currently engaged in. Another one's coming. Until we get to heaven, battles are coming. But number 7, with God, we win big. Now, Israel was overwhelmed by what they saw. But as somebody once said, remember, when the outlook looks bad, try the uplook. When the outlook looks bad, try the uplook. And remember to not let the devil draw you into his arena. You stay in the Spirit. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3, we end with this. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for the pulling down of strongholds. Stay in the Spirit, walk in the Spirit, and no Goliath will get you. Father, thank you for this time and your word. It's a familiar story, but so many great lessons for us, God. We just want to say thank you, and also to know, Lord, that this really happened. This isn't just some old story that is some analogy, some metaphorical thing. This is a real life and death thing. And you honored the faith of a young guy who dared to believe that your word is true and that he would walk by faith and make sure that nobody would defy the armies of the living God. That he would be your instrument to bring down those who would curse you and your people. Lord, again, thank you for this. May you increase our faith. May you prepare us for the next battle that we're going to face. And Lord, may we fight with the weapons you've given to us in the realm of the Spirit, not in the flesh. In Jesus' name we pray. And everybody said, amen. Let's stand for closing.